Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
A quick note before we start today's episode. You might notice that this recording sounds a little bit different. That's because it was all organized, edited, and produced by my guest today, who even edited in this extra little bit after I asked him to. So a massive thanks to Xiang Yu for being a guest and for basically doing everything. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another podcast of Discover North Korea. I am Zoe from Zoe Discovers, and today I am joined by a very special guest. I'm going to introduce him very shortly. He's currently sitting next to me waiting to open our soju bottle and cans of beer. But firstly, I want to thank you all for coming back to another episode. Thank you for listening and following the podcast as we're still into, I guess, its first few episodes. So I really appreciate you all coming back. And just a little bit of a reminder, I am not just on podcast form. I am in... I'm also on various social medias, and you can find me generally on the handles of @ZoeDiscovers or @ZoeDiscoversNK on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and also YouTube, where I make lots of vlogs on North Korea and also Taiwan, where I am currently and where we are currently, I should say, in Tainan, where we actually have just been enjoying for the past, I don't know, 6 or 7 hours, the... lovely sights of Tainan during Chinese New Year, because that's when we're recording this podcast. It's going to be coming out probably a few weeks after, but nevertheless, we've been having some fun, and I've already had, and are already, I guess, a couple of beers in. So without further ado, I want to introduce you to our guest, Xiang Yu. Maybe you can introduce yourself, let the listeners know who you are and why you're on this podcast.
Hello, everyone. My name is Xiang Yu, and I like to think of myself as just some guy on the internet where I share information and opinions on topics that I'm passionate about. And some of those topics include, of course, North Korea, but also cross-strait relations between Taiwan and mainland China, Taiwan's history and politics, and Sino-U.S. relations, especially during a time when we are departing from a unipolar world order and headed towards the era of multipolarity. Some of you might know me as the guy who recorded a selfie stick music video in North Korea a few years ago. And a few years ago, I came across Zoe online because YouTube's algorithm determined that I'd possibly be interested in her content because I consume quite a bit of North Korea-related media. And eventually, we started talking a little, so that's how we linked up. And then last year, she said she'd be pursuing her PhD at National Chenggong University, located in southern Taiwan's Tainan City, which happens to be my mom's hometown. It's where I spent a good chunk of my childhood and where many of my relatives live. So naturally, I visit the city somewhat regularly. So the last time I visited, I reached out to Zoe to meet up, and we found that we got along quite well. And apparently, I have some interesting things to say about my understanding and travels to the DPRK and how they tie in with some of my family history. So here I am.
Yeah, definitely. I'm super excited. And we do have a little bit of things to focus on. I mean, I guess you touched upon the fact that you, like, recorded a music video in North Korea. That's something that, like, very few people can say. I think you also have a really, like, unique insight into the country. So we do have a few focus points that'll keep us, focused on the task at hand. But firstly, actually, the most important thing we need to do is, should we crack these beers open and make ourselves some somek?
Yes.
Excellent. Yeah, you do that. That's always a good sound.
Based.
Okay, and aside from the soju, somek kind of combo, we also have, I kind of brought along some, I don't know, you guys might have seen it. I recently made a kind of video, unpacking video, where I basically got hold of all of the stuff that I have collected in North Korea, like working for like 3 years in North Korea. It was all in Beijing. It has been in Beijing since the start of COVID. And I recently got it sent all the way to Taiwan. I say all the way, it's just over the water, to Taiwan. And in there were some very interesting items, one of which we will be maybe enjoying, maybe regretting today. We still haven't really worked out what it is, but it is a, I mean, have a look. I really, it looks like honey. It smells like alcohol. It doesn't say it has any alcohol content, but I mean, I don't know. Did you give it a smell? You can open it because I already opened it.
It just says Kaesong Koryo Insam, which is like Korean ginseng from Kaesong City.
Maybe it is just ginseng. Maybe that's where I'm getting this weird smell from. What do you think?
It's like this honey made from ginseng.
Is it? Yeah. Is there no alcohol in there? Because it looks like, obviously you guys don't have a visual here. It looks like a cough syrup is the best way I can describe it, but also kind of like honey. Like it's really thick, it's syrupy, and the label looks like it's yellow and brown and it looks like honeycomb.
Maybe if we mix it with Sprite and put in a few Jolly Ranchers, it'll be Korean lean.
We need to try that. Oh, and I mean, I know this is a podcast, but I do actually have two other things to get us into this mood. I haven't told you about these yet. So hold on whilst I get this out of my bag. I'll have to take a picture and post it on social media so you guys can see what's going on. But okay, let me try.
It's ginseng.
Is it just ginseng?
But it's like kind of sweet. It has the consistency of honey, so I can
understand.
But
there's no alcohol in it? That's really disappointing.
No, it doesn't have alcohol in it. But there's a Family Mart right next to us, so if we feel
okay, if we
like
run out of soju.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you can feel free to keep this ginseng here.
Do you want to get a sip of this, the only
Please.
18 days first, before we mix it with anything else?
I would really love a sip of only 18 days. Does this mean that it's like just brewed 18 days ago? It only... Oh, I know what it means. It means that it only stays... you can only drink it 18 days after it's been bottled because it hasn't been pasteurized? Is that a thing? Because that's like the North Korean beer, like you can only drink it like a few days after.
Well, it actually tastes better than like the Jinpai, what is it, the golden medal and like the classic Taiwan beer.
Yeah, no, no.
It's definitely better, right?
I'm not sure. It just tastes like Chinese beer, to be honest.
Want to try some of the citron flavored soju?
I always want to try some soju. Okay, and so this is for you. Oh my gosh, they've got glitter on from my joggery. This one's for you. And I'll also wear this one, but you can keep this one. This is now yours.
Oh, wow.
This is my gift to you for being on my podcast. And,
고맙습니다, 저희 동무.
네. So this is basically a North Korean cap. Basically, how would you describe this? Does it fit? Is it okay?
It more or less fits. My head's a little bit big. Well, I guess I could kind of pass as a Korean. But a little bit better than you could, I would say.
Yeah,
just a little bit.
How do I look in that?
It's drip.
I don't know what that means. Good?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So these are basically, I guess, how would you describe these? The most typical, stereotypical North Korean hats that you could have. Like the ones that kind of look like army caps.
But not really.
Yeah, sometimes have a star on the front. But I mean, these were bought in the market in Rason, right in the northeast. And so these are like, this is what the North Koreans will be wearing. And they have been in my suitcase for a long time. So I thought of no better place than on top of your head, apparently.
Yeah. You will see some factory workers and farm workers wearing these.
Yeah. You kind of see them everywhere. But yeah. To be honest, they don't have much function because they don't do much in keeping your head warm. And yeah, I don't know. I love the Chinese inside them, actually. Fushi. What does yours say?
Mine says the same.
Oh, okay.
Wait, let's see if yours is... They're the same size.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I'll keep it on for the spirit of the podcast.
Yeah, yeah. So now we've got our soju. We've got our Korean caps on. We have Korean ginseng. And we also have some telpi, some dried fish. How do you call it?
When I was in Rason, they called it myeongtae. Myeongtae.
Okay, okay. Ah, that makes sense.
Myeongtae.
So this is like, I mean, actually the setup, it really reminds me of a North Korean train journey. Like, I feel like we could be trolling along the way through Sinuiju all the way through to Pyongyang, because we've got our beer, we've got our soju, and now we've got our telpi, which is something that you really would find the North Koreans eat all the time and drink all the time indeed, especially on the train as you are traveling through North Korea. It's one of my favorite things to do, actually, to kind of chat to the North Koreans on the train. I think it's the nicest introduction to North Korea, because people really start to see, hey, this society is, it's actually, people are real. But do you want to talk about I spoke way back a few episodes on my first trip to North Korea. Like, you've been to North Korea before.
Yes, I have.
Do you want to chat to us about, like, kind of what was your experience? Where did you go? And yeah, what was that like?
So fun fact, Zoe and I were actually in North Korea at the same time. And we were actually both in the May Day Stadium on the same day with Grand Marshal Kim Jong-un present as well.
Yeah.
So the last time we met up, I told her, I was like, this is the first time we're in the same building together without Kim Jong-un.
And yeah, just to be fair, like, that was the second time we'd only ever meet up. It's not as if Kim Jong-un is there every single time we meet up. It just so happened that the only time we'd been in the room together, Marshal Kim Jong-un was also there.
But neither of us were aware of each other's existence back then.
Yeah.
So it was kind of small world.
small world when you work in North Korea and hang out with Kim Jong-un, apparently.
No, we did not hang out with Kim Jong-un because I don't want the CIA coming and talking to me, because... If either of us ever meet him, we better keep it a secret.
True. And so, hey, actually, it makes it a... that's a good point, because... So you're Taiwanese-American.
Yes.
So Americans can't visit North Korea.
Yes.
Right. So does that, how does that bode for how you got into North Korea and stuff like that? Like, was it difficult for you? And how does your family feel and your friends in the U.S.? Maybe you can speak from the point of a U.S. citizen.
So if you look at the wording of the travel ban, it's not a ban on U.S. citizens to go to the DPRK. And by the way, this ban is unilateral. It's a ban by the U.S. government, not the DPRK authorities. But the ban is not on citizens. It's a ban on U.S. citizens traveling on a U.S. passport to the DPRK. You see the wording here. So by traveling on my Taiwan passport to North Korea, I wasn't violating any law. My family, I guess my mom just knew she couldn't stop me. My dad was just like, whatever.
Sounds really similar to my experience.
Yeah. My grandma, so my maternal grandmother was like, I probably shouldn't go there because, like, I saw this and that on the news and it's dangerous. But, you know, a lot of my friends thought I was crazy, but I also have a lot of friends who are fascinated and were kind of jealous, because, like, I have some friends who are, like, U.S. citizens who want to go but can't go, so they were kind of envious.
Hmm.
Yeah, overall, it was, even the people who kind of thought I was crazy were still curious about it. So, I traveled in 2018. And I had wanted to travel there for a while, and I was living in Taiwan at the time, so I was there from 2017 to 2019, and then now I'm back here for at least a year. So I was like, well, I kind of want to go, and my dad's also living in Beijing, so I figured if I visit him, then I would want to go on a train and travel to North Korea. And my original plan was to travel with a Chinese tour company because, Taiwan residents, we go to the mainland, we use the travel passport Taiwan compatriots to the mainland. So we are legally PRC citizens as far as Beijing is concerned, which means I can travel on a Chinese tour company and go to North Korea that way if I wanted to. But it happened to be the tour I booked was national, like it was National Week, so like National Day on September 9th, the founding of the DPRK. And I think, if I understand correctly, they wanted to give everyone the fair chance to have the opportunity to travel to the DPRK. So I think they had like a limit on how many Chinese people could go. Yeah. So instead of traveling with a Chinese tour company, because they are a little bit cheaper, I instead went with a company that targets Western tourists. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's true, actually. And that's a really good point. Like, two points, actually. So the first one is, like, there are two different kinds of companies that take tours into North Korea. And whilst the one that you, at least my listeners, might have heard about the most is, like, these Western tour companies that take in the Westerners, right? And that limits, you know, that has a limit of, like, a few thousand tourists every year at best. But there's actually a much bigger tourism market, and that is with the Chinese tour groups that go into North Korea. And there is actually so many Chinese tour groups that, you know, as you just mentioned, like, they have to be limited, especially during these peak times, which is generally during the summer, during national holidays, especially national holidays that coincide with holidays in China as well. These big holidays, for example, National Day, they do limit Chinese tourists so that everyone kind of gets a fair chance as well. And also, just because the DPRK has limited tourism infrastructure, it does not have enough hotel rooms. Despite what you might think, like, there is not just one hotel that you can stay in. Actually, you stayed in a really interesting area in Pyongyang that we'll talk about in a minute. But it's not just this one hotel on the island that everyone knows, Yanggakdo Hotel. Actually, there's at least 10 in Pyongyang. I think I've personally stayed in about 5 or 6 of them.
I'm going to try to name some of them. So Yanggakdo, Seosam,
yeah.
Goryeo, Cheongyeon.
That's not its official name, I don't think, but it is the one where all the Cheongryon stay in.
I wasn't saying Cheongryon, I was saying Cheongryon.
Oh, yeah.
Those are the ones I know.
So you didn't say my favorite one, which is, honestly, I have to check the name of this, which is the one that is in central Pyongyang, and it's super cool. It's right next to the Ryodong Shimbun. I think it's called Haesan.
You've been there 30 times. You should know.
Actually, to be honest, I made this super cool thing that, like, I don't want to do, like, you know, too much promotion on here, but, like, I did make this really cool travel guides thing on Koryo Tours' website, and you can basically go onto the website and search the travel guides and then just click into North Korea, and you can actually search, like, all of the hotels throughout the whole of North Korea. So, you know, there is not just Yanggakdo. But basically what I was saying is, like, you know, they need to limit the Chinese tourists because, like, sometimes there's literally just not enough beds available. So the places that you missed off, there's the Rakrang Hotel. Mm-hmm. Which is not that interesting. There's the Riangang Hotel. Oh, wait, no. Riangang Hotel is not interesting. Rakrang Hotel, I stayed in once and I got given a suite. And I love this hotel. It's actually a military hotel. The military stay there. I don't know why I was allowed to stay there once, but it was the coolest thing. And I ask for it every single time I go back. I've never once got it. But I really love it because it's right on the banks of the Taedonggang River. You can actually go to the barbecue restaurant that's just outside of here. And you can go there just to have barbecue. It's such a cool vibe. But I love staying here. It was really retro. Koryo Hotel, you said that one. There's the Kobangsan Hotel. I don't think I've ever stayed there. Moranbong Hotel. There's the Youth Hotel.
Youth Hotel is the Cheongnyeon Hotel.
Cheongnyeon. Yeah. It makes sense. Okay. You didn't say the most expensive hotel.
I heard about it. I forgot the name.
The super luxury one. Potonggang.
Oh, yeah.
On the Potonggang River. And then Haebangsan, that's what I was trying to say before. Mm. Haebangsan, I've only stayed there once, and again, it's a super quirky hotel. It's right in the middle of Pyongyang, like, literally central. It's in a really politically sensitive area because it's right next to, like, the, you know, newspaper and some sensitive areas. So it's a quirky place to stay, but, you know, that's just a short list of the hotels in Pyongyang, and then obviously there are way more throughout the country. But the place where you stayed in Pyongyang is not actually on this list. Where did you stay in Pyongyang?
I stayed at what they call the living quarters for visiting scientists.
What does that mean?
It's there is this one building called the SciTech Complex. It's that building that is in the shape of an atom if you look at it from an aerial view. And the place where I stayed is connected to that. In most pictures, it'll be on the top right of the picture. It's like a little tower. And that's where, I guess, scientists from all throughout the country and abroad go and stay. And because they ran out of hotels because it was the week of National Day, my tour group ended up being put over there. And it was pretty nice. It's entirely powered by green energy.
That's
geothermal.
So cool. That's so interesting. Wow. Yeah.
Geothermal and solar.
Wow.
Combination of the two.
Because you do see like a load of solar panels all throughout the DPRK. So that's really interesting that you like experienced that. Did they have any power outages?
No, not when I was there.
Wow. Okay. Did you have like rooms or was it like a suite with like a kitchen? Like it sounds like it's more of like a living area, right? Or like was it like a hotel?
Hotel room was over there. It was kind of like this one.
Right.
Right here.
Yeah. We're currently filming in a hotel room. Recording in a hotel room.
Yeah. And it was pretty much like a hotel. But there were these lounge areas on each floor that kind of remind me of student lounges in college dormitories.
Oh, they have that in a lot of the floors, actually, like in the Yanggakdo and stuff. Actually, there's this really funny video that one of the it's one of those really famous dumb, and I'm sorry to say the word dumb, but it is a really dumb vlog. It's one of those really clickbaity vlogs that's like, you know, North Korea is crazy, I went on a trip there, blah, blah, blah. And there's this guy in it. This one went super viral, actually. So, you know, I say it's dumb, but it's actually really frustrating that things like this go super viral. But because there's this, this guy goes to North Korea and makes this vlog, and then I remember my colleague actually took him in. My colleague was telling me about it, and like he literally went to one of these corridors. So in a lot of North Korean hotels, they have corridors where they have like seats in them, and it's really random because no one ever wants to sit in like a floor corridor. Like, you know, it's just a bit weird. I don't know. And they have ashtrays there and stuff, but like in reality, it's not a really cool place to hang out. And often the lights are off and stuff like that. And anyway, this guy was walking around this corridor and was trying to make North Korea sound like really scary and stuff. So he was going around these areas where no one was because they're not cool areas to hang out in, and turning off the lights and sitting in the corner and being like, yo, the lights are off, there's no one around, like stuff like this. And this video gets really famous, and this is what like people believe about North Korea, but in reality, like, no one sits in these areas because they're not cool. Like, I find these like floor, you know, these floor areas with like this random sofas and ashtrays and stuff like that really strange. Like,
my question is, where isn't there an ashtray in North Korea?
Oh my gosh, yeah. it's a very good question. They take the no smoking indoors thing to a what did you say before? It's a
suggestion.
Yeah, suggestion, not a rule.
Which reminds me, because you were talking about those sensational videos, and when Kim Jong-il passed away, I guess it was on the news all the time, and we saw all the video footage of the people, the residents of Pyongyang, like crying in front of the statues and paying their respects and being all solemn. And the Western media was like, oh, they're all just a bunch of brainwashed drones. And at the same time, they came out with a bunch of videos of like how absolutely dystopian and messed up, and North Korea is how up is down over there and left is right and black is white, and just really scary. And then there was that book, I forgot the name of the author. I think it was Barbara. I forgot her last name. I think it's Barbara. It's called Nothing to Envy. And there was just, I read the book and there were like so many claims that I was like, this can't all be true. So I kind of like brought it up with my dad, because my dad grew up in South Korea as part of the Hwagyo, Hwachiao, which means like overseas Chinese in Korea. And he told me, he was just like, you know, don't believe absolutely everything, because your grandfather told me that during the Korean War, when the Korean People's Army captured Seoul, they treated the residents with respect. And my grandfather wasn't really political. He wasn't like some sort of communist sympathizer or anything. He was just some guy trying to get by. And he told my dad that, hey, the KPA treated the residents of Seoul with respect, while it was the U.S. forces that were there that were kind of being just really invasive and acting like an occupying force. And that's not what the media tells us. So he was like, just take everything with a grain of salt and don't believe anything until you actually see it and decide for yourself.
It's a really good lesson, and I think it's really important, like, when we talk about North Korea tourism, it's one of those things that, like, I really believe, you know, it holds a lot of value going to visit North Korea and really seeing these things for yourselves. But would you say that, like, this is one of those things that inspired you to go on your trip to North Korea? Like, why did you decide to go? Like, what sparked the interest in North Korea?
There is this, and there was also the idea that North Korea, a lot of the issues that they face are the result of, there's various ones, but one of them is sanctions. But at some point, I mean, you look at countries like, you look at Vietnam, you look at mainland China. At a certain point in history, the way they were portrayed in Western media was pretty similar to the way North Korea is portrayed today. Mainland China today, you go to like Beijing today, you go to like Chongqing today, you go to like Shanghai today. It's not the same like Shanghai that people spoke of in like the 60s and 70s, where everything was, for lack of a better term, like different world, you know. And I figured at some point North Korea is going to change one way or another. All countries do. And I wanted to see it the way it is now, because it's going to be different in 10 years, 20 years. Because, I mean, it was different 30, 40 years ago. I mean, every few years, there's plenty of changes.
Yeah.
Like, and if you went in like 2008, for example, they would take your phone
And totally different.
Keep it at the airport until you left the country. Mm-hmm. You know, these sorts of things. So I feel like if I go again today, because the last time I went was in 2019 to Nasun. If I went again today, there would probably be many things that are different. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I'm super excited to see, like, what kind of things. I mean, I'm excited, but at the same time, I'll be sad to see what kind of things will be different. Because, like, you know, it's one thing when a country changes and you're kind of going in and out. You know, it's the same when anything changes. When something changes and you're a part of it, you don't notice that change until you kind of look back. But I don't know. For me, like, and I suppose for you as well, like, it will be sad, like, in a way, kind of going back and seeing all these things have changed. But, you know, if it's good change, then obviously it's a great thing. And I think, you know, a lot of people will say, like, oh my gosh, you know, there's so many cars in North Korea now. Like, it's such a shame. And I'm like, it's not a shame. Like, let them develop, you know, like, they want to develop. These changes are good. Even if, you know, for us, it makes it more kind of, I don't know, normal. Like, it's developing like a normal country.
Deng Xiaoping once said, 贫穷不是社会主义. Pauperism is not socialism. Yeah. Everybody wants their country to become more prosperous and for people to have better standards of living.
Yeah.
So it's like the way some people fantasize, like, North Korea, saying, oh, I like it because it's so, like, quaint, and they have, like, these old cars, and there's no cars, there's no this and that. They're basically saying there's less development. But I mean, it's like, okay, you're not living there. Wouldn't you want, like, more conveniences? Wouldn't you want better living standards?
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah, like, to fantasize about these things, like, going to North Korea because you want to see, like, what life is like in the past, and you want to see, like, kind of all of this backwards things, like, you know, that's not cool. Like, yeah. And the country also does not want to be like that forever. Like, they are looking to develop, and they do develop. It's just going a little bit slower than what we might, you know, experience in the West, but also not as slow as other countries.
Definitely.
You know, there are so many other countries where, like, I mean, North Korea is super paranoid and they don't want to, like, show these aspects of poverty and stuff like that. But for, I don't know, for someone like me who's, you know, traveled to a few countries, right? Like, you see a lot more poverty in, like, various other countries. And not just because, like, they let you see it and they show it more. It's, like, just because they're poorer. You know, there are countries that are poorer and less developed than North Korea.
You go to any country, locals generally don't want foreigners taking pictures of poverty because it can feel humiliating, especially if the visitor appears to be wealthier. And you'll find that Koreans, both northerners and southerners, really care about their presentation and want to show their best to guests. The only difference is North Korea exercises more sovereignty than most developing countries and has greater control over their visitors.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. you had, if you're a foreigner and you're not like a businessman or a student, or if you're just a tourist, you need to be with, you know, babysitters, essentially.
How did you find that? Like, was it your first time going on a guided tour, or was it your, you know, do you often go on guided tours when you travel? And like, did you find it restricted your freedom? I mean, especially from the view of a US citizen, that like, you know, you guys like your freedom.
Well, I mean, if you travel to any country where you don't speak the language, you're going to need people to help you out. Mm. And like, my Korean is not very good. I've traveled on guided tours before, like as a kid, like traveling with family a few times, not too often, but I mean, I feel like it's a comparable experience. It's nothing too out of the ordinary as far as guided tours go. For example, one example I like to bring is, they're like, well, they're only showing you the things they want you to see. You're not seeing like the bad things. I'm like, okay, well, you know, if you're a tourist and you go to Bali, a lot of foreigners who go to Bali, what do they see? They see the airport. They see the roads between the airport and the high-end resort they're staying at, and nothing else.
Yeah.
So it's like, I mean, even as somebody who's like lived in Taiwan in the U.S., it's like I've never visited like maximum security prisons and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I don't think I could if I wanted to. I couldn't just roll up to a prison and be like, "Go, show me around. I want to see what the solitary confinement rooms are like. I want to see." You know?
Yeah, definitely. And I think, like, I mean, I spoke about it on the episode on, like, ethical travel to North Korea. But, like, you know, in terms of ethical travel, people have a lot of beef with it. And, like, when you talk about travel to North Korea, but, like, is travel to, like, prison camps and stuff like that ethical? Like, at what point do you draw the line between ethical travel? Because, like, it's not cool to go around taking pictures of poverty and stuff like that wherever you go. So, yeah, there's that kind of line to draw. But yeah, it's interesting that you didn't really mind. I mean, I suppose when you sign up to a tour to North Korea, you kind of sign up to the fact that you're going to be walked around by guides. But did you find it so strict? Or
I didn't really find it strict. I got along with my guides. Part of it is, hey, they're there doing their job. They have the guides have their own insight. The guides' insights are probably a little bit different from the insights of the average citizen. I mean, just like people in different professions will see things differently. And every guide has his or her own story. Like my guide, one of my guides, Mr. Che, he's a son of a diplomat. So he lived in Cambodia in his, I think, during his teenage years for a few years. That's very different from another guide who stayed in Switzerland in her youth. That was another tour guide in another tour group, but our two groups traveled together. So she was kind of our guide. But like our other guide that we had, Miss Rowe, I believe she's the daughter of professors. So all of them come from different backgrounds. They all have different attitudes towards different things. And they're just people, you know, just like in any country you go to, you meet people from different family backgrounds and different professions or whatever. You're going to encounter a diversity of views. And it's the same thing over there.
Definitely. And I think the best way to find out about North Korea is by doing exactly what we are now, is enjoying a beer and a soju in the evening. You know, did you have any interesting conversations with your guides in any of the bars in North Korea?
Oh, yeah. Quite a few. On the last day, one of my guys, we were drinking, and I think we drank quite a bit, and he started telling me about the tourists that he liked and didn't like. That was kind of funny.
That's hilarious. Did you share the same opinion? Did you have a gossip about tourists that you didn't like?
I didn't dislike the guy who he didn't like. In fact, I'm kind of friends with him, but I understand why the guides didn't like him. He was just like, too much trouble. I don't like him, but you're cool. Most of the other people are cool. They're one of the best groups I've had in a while.
You know what? I bet he says that to everyone, as in, like, the next person that he speaks with, too. He's like, oh, yeah, you know, that Shang Yu guy, like, he's really causing trouble. Like,
I didn't get spoken to by the higher-ups, like, that problem. Ooh. That problem tourist.
Oh, so you had some trouble on tour. What happened?
I was just I think you know, the rules are simple. You stay with your tour group. You don't just wander off. We were visiting the Pyongyang Metro, and one of the tourists decided that, well, his story is that it was an accident and he just got on the train thinking that we were supposed to get on. My theory is he was very into photography. I think he wanted pictures of a metro station without tourists in it.
Wow.
It's not one of those things I can prove, but...
So he just, like... So you guys were at the Pyongyang Metro, and you were in one of the stops, and then he just got onto one of the metros as it came, and then just left you guys?
Yes.
That's mental.
Everyone was just like, yo, where is this guy? Where is he?
Did anyone see him get on? Or he just, like, got on?
I don't think people saw him get on, but what he told me was, I think... Something about him just made him stand out, apparently, okay. Because he said some little kid kept on staring at him on the train. And then as soon as he got off the train, that kid went and talked and spoke to the station attendant.
I mean, it's probably anything to do with, like, what he's wearing and stuff like that. Like, it's really easy to not fit into North Korean society because a lot of the clothing, your hair and stuff like that, mm-hmm. It is quite, like, you know, you don't want to stand out. And so if you go around wearing jeans or whatever, then you are going to stand out. And maybe that kid had seen him, like, hanging around with the foreigners and stuff, so.
I mean, that person was Asian, but it was his dress and his demeanor, honestly.
Yeah, and I just want to say, like, that's a crazy story, but, like, I really do not recommend at all ever breaking any rules in North Korea or going away. I'll drink this so you can give me some more soju. I definitely do not recommend taking the rules too lightly in North Korea. You know, I say that it's safe, and I joke that it's safer than going to some places in the UK, and that may well be very true, but that's because I understand the rules very well, and I am very willing to follow these rules, and that is the most important thing. Oh no, soju everywhere.
I was supposed to put Sprite into it afterwards.
We have quite the cocktail going on.
Can you take...
Oh my gosh. Okay, so we have Sprite.
I'm trying to make the proportions correct again. I put in too much beer, so I'm going to pour more soju.
Is there a name for this cocktail?
I saw it on Instagram once. I forgot the name.
Wait, don't you need to put Sprite in here, not more soju?
But I'm trying to get the beer and soju...
it's strong.
...proportions correct. Can you take another sip? And then I'll pour the Sprite in.
Yeah, don't break the rules in North Korea, guys. Oh my gosh, he's adding ginseng to this now. This is really the most unique cocktail that I've ever had. In one of the most unique situations I've ever had. So, now we just mentioned kind of breaking the rules and not breaking the rules. I do actually have a whole episode on, like, what happens if you don't break the rules. I think that's episode 3. So, go back and have a listen to that if you want to know what happens if you break the rules in North Korea and how strict it really is. But... as an American tourist and, you know, as a tourist in North Korea in general, did you feel safe?
I felt really safe.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Cool. Anything ever made you nervous or?
Not really. If there was anything I would be nervous about, it would be if there were some sort of tension between the U.S. and Korea and if the U.S. did something. But because of nukes and mutually assured destruction... full-blown attacks by either side is just not much of a possibility.
So the main thing that you were concerned about your safety was actually, you know, in case, like, war broke out?
I mean, it's like a very far-fetched thing. It's like, I didn't expect it to happen, but it's like, what else could happen? I mean, I would follow the rules. I wouldn't do anything there that's just, like, foolish. You know, I respect the people there, respect their sensitivities. What's the worst thing? I don't know if I've slipped and fell, like when we're visiting a site and fall off a bridge into a waterfall. I don't know. Something like that. That was probably the extent of my concern. I wasn't concerned about getting detained for anything because, well, one, I'm not working for like any sort of government. I'm there as a tourist.
Yeah, fair enough. And it was this tour that you did this music video in North Korea, or what on earth, you know, where did that come about? Do tell us about this music video in North Korea. And more importantly, come on, bit of self-promo here. Where can we see this video in North Korea?
Well, it's from my last album. I have this thing where I come out with something and I'm like happy with it for a while. And then I'm just like, you know, I could do better. I don't like it anymore. But that song is called, I guess in English it's called Rumors and Slanders. In Chinese it's called 流言蜚语, which is an idiom that is also used in Korean. I think it's 流言蜚语 in Korean. And like the DPRK actually uses that about like the way they are demonized by the media from abroad. And my perspective was just like, well, not to get too political on this podcast, but it's like, why can't a country that is heavily sanctioned and is in the crosshairs of a superpower, a hegemony that wants to see it fall, why is it wrong for them to be paranoid and for them to want to have a nuclear deterrent especially when this country is the only country that's ever used nuclear weapons on a civilian population. And it's like, why do we call them like this prison land when the country with the highest rate of imprisonment is not North Korea, but the U.S.? So it's just putting these things into perspective. And I guess it's my way of saying, hey, I, and not just me, but like the people in America have more in common with the average person in North Korea than they do with their own government.
Mm.
And I genuinely believe that. Culturally, maybe we do not have too much in common, but what do we all want? We want a better future for ourselves, our children, if we do have them, our families. We care about our families. We want our communities to do well. We don't want our communities to fall apart. We don't want our families to fall apart.
Hmm.
You know, I think that's something that people all over the world want. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's a really interesting message. Like, what kind of music can our listeners expect to hear upon searching this? What's the genre?
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's Chinese hip-hop. I rap in Chinese. That's just something that I decided to do when I was younger, and it just kind of stuck. And I accidentally developed my own following here in Taiwan, and now I'm slowly in mainland China as well. So it's just something that I decided to keep up with, and eventually it became this sort of hobby that pays for itself.
Nice. Yeah. You hear that, folks? We got a celebrity on the podcast. There you go. This podcast just keeps giving.
I think you're I feel like I'm with a celebrity when I'm hanging out with
Absolutely
you.
Not. No, like this.
You're TikTok famous.
TikTok famous does not count. You know, you can upload a 10-second video and get millions of views, and then on Instagram you spend hours and hours editing a video and you end up with nothing. So, what was I going to say?
Oh, this is so good with the addition of this.
Yeah, it's not bad with the thing,
ginseng,
right?
Yeah. It makes it healthy.
With the although, you know what they say about ginseng in North Korea, right?
What do they say about it?
They say that it's, they say it's good for men.
Everything's good for men over there. Like, dog meat's good for men there.
That's true. Yeah, they say it like helps. Zhuangyang. Yeah, it helps men be powerful. So, okay. There you go. No more ginseng for you. So, filming a music video in North Korea, we found out about your kind of music, but what does it entail if you want to film a music video in North Korea? And where did you film it? How did you pick your backdrop? Tell me more about that.
Well, I wanted to film all over, everywhere I visited, but for much of my trip, I actually ended up with an upset stomach.
Oh, no.
So
that happens in North Korea. I have been food poisoned in Masikryong ski resort. Awful, awful drive from Pyongyang to Masikryong for 3 hours in the car.
Have you ever had food poisoning and a water shortage at the same time?
No, that truly sounds very bad.
Happened in Hamhung.
Oh, no. I mean,
I wanted to die.
Oh, wait, there was a water shortage. Like, you couldn't, like, shower or flush or what?
No, we could
or just not drinking water.
No, what they did was there was a water shortage. Like, there was only running water for a few hours a day. So what the hotel staff did was fill up a bucket. But, like, it's different from having running water, especially when you're Yeah.
Especially when you really need it. And I think I know exactly. So you stayed in, I mean, we kind of briefly touched on your first North Korea tour. Maybe you can take us briefly like through where you went before we talk about your video a little bit more. But I just want to mention this Hamhung bit, because this hotel in Hamhung, it's like one of my favorite hotels. It's like literally really cool staying on the beach. But they do limit the water. And so basically like what you get is you get this really cool, like nice beach house. I actually have like a whole video on it. But they give you a massive bucket. And when I say massive bucket, like, could you get in there? You could probably get into that bucket.
Yeah, I could.
Yeah. But like someone did that. And like,
I think the both of us could at the same time.
Yeah. But the problem is like they keep that water warm for you. They want to keep it warm for you, and they keep it warm. I don't know if you saw it with like,
with the little stick that's plugged into the wall.
Yeah.
And did you get shocked?
Yes.
That happened to me too.
But it's so obvious. It's literally a metal stick that's like in the water, and it's so obvious what it is. It's a metal stick that's plugged into the wall, and they sit it right in the middle of this massive bucket that you could climb into. And yeah,
you're supposed to unplug it before you take the water. But when you're like really sick and you desperately need water, you don't really think about it. So I just stuck my hand into the bucket, and yeah, I got shocked.
Oh no, that's awful. Yeah, you're not. Don't worry, you're not the first person that's happened to.
I wasn't the only person on the tour.
Yeah, yeah.
As soon as you said that, I knew where it was going.
But you've been to Rasan, Hamhung, Pyongyang.
Wonsan. Made a stop in Kaesong, a stop in Sinuiju.
Sinuiju. And that's it?
Basically, yeah.
So, I mean, I say that's it, but it's actually quite an extensive tour. I guess you were there for a couple of weeks, right?
Not a couple of weeks. It was
1 week.
More like a little over a week.
A little over a week. And so I guess this is one of those, like, you know, basic tours with the Northeast added in, because Rasan is a pretty... Or is it like a Rasan extension?
No, Rasan I went a few months afterwards.
Ah, so you've been twice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because, I mean, my dad lives in Beijing, so it's like I just do it. So it's like if I visit him, I'll just, yeah,
cool.
Because with Rasan, part of it was also just me wanting to see Yanbian, Yanji, like the Korean Autonomous Prefecture in Jilin Province.
That's in China.
Yeah,
yeah. How did you find Yanji? I mean, I find it a really interesting place. Like everything is in both Chinese and Korean. It's incredibly culturally interesting.
It's really interesting because if you take the train there from Beijing, you feel like you're kind of in Korea. But then you go back there from Korea and you can just really feel that you're back in China.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Like going from Beijing to Yanji, I couldn't have said it better myself, actually. You go there and you're like, whoa, I'm in Korea. But then once going to North Korea and then coming back out to Yanji, and you see like the massive buildings and the big lights and like loads of people. And I think like, you know, all those neon signs and stuff, like you get that in North Korea. It's like Yanji for me, now I think about it, is like North Korea on steroids. Like it's what North Korea would probably like to be if it had a little bit more money in its economy. Like I can see that being what North Korea would become.
I don't know. I could see a place like Wonsan, or like Chongji becoming
true.
Like that,
yeah.
In like 10 years.
Yeah, Wonsan could totally become that, yeah.
Yeah. Do you listen to music from Yanji?
No, but yeah, maybe really I should get into that.
No, they're really good at singing.
Really?
Yeah, it's like 불근에서 산에, and then like some of these classic songs, it's like they'll have like one verse in Korean and then like another in Chinese.
This sounds so fun.
Like, yeah.
And now when we say Koreans in China, in this Chinese province, are we talking about North Koreans or South Koreans, or what's the deal here?
They're neither. They are Chinese citizens of Korean background, and they say China is one country with 56, I guess the way they say it now is ethnicities, but like the way that it used to be explained was 56 nationalities, but nowadays people confuse the word like nationality with like, you know, your country of origin. So yeah. And Koreans, one of the 55 minority, like you have Han being like the majority, 50, like Koreans, because like there's been a long history of Korea migration to China, and in northeastern China, in this area called Yanbian, it's been traditionally like populated by mostly Koreans. So yeah, they are they're Chinese citizens of Korean background, and they're afforded, like the people there can go to schools that are taught in Korean. Like Korean is an official language in that prefecture, and if you go to that area, signage is in both Chinese and in Korean. So you could be somebody who doesn't speak Chinese at all, only speaks Korean, and get around there for the most part.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And you will hear these languages, like, all around. And, like, you know, sometimes the people look different as well. And, like, it's just all around a very different atmosphere from Beijing. And it's, you know, a kind of nice, I guess, introduction to Korean culture as well. It's kind of nice halfway point.
I kind of feel at home because, like, so my dad, he's Chinese. Well, my grandmother is Korean. But, like, in South Korea, he was recognized as Chinese, like, because his father's Chinese. My grandfather's Chinese. So, he grew up there, but he wasn't given Korean citizenship. But, I mean, by growing up in Korea, you know, like, the food he eats and all that stuff, you pick up all of that local stuff. And growing up with him, I ate a lot of Korean food growing up, for example. I was, like, always adjacent to Korean culture, even though I never really spoke Korean. Like, Chinese was a language I was spoken at home.
What's your favorite Korean food?
It is hard to say. It's either between Pyongyang ramyeon or sundubu-jjigae. I really love sundubu-jjigae.
Yeah.
But it has to be like a specialty shop that specializes in sundubu-jjigae. You know how it's kind of like in North Korea, all restaurants sell like Pyongyang ramyeon, but it's like the places that specialize in it are the ones that are good. Because like other places that have it, that don't specialize in it, they're kind of mid.
Yeah, there are some restaurants, like a lot of the time in North Korea, like when you're on a tour, you'll get the option between, like, you know, do you want Pyongyang naemyeon, which is Pyongyang cold noodles, or do you want kimchi jjigae, or like, you know, actually they don't have kimchi jjigae. What do they have? They have, what's it called?
Bibimbap?
Yes. So you
had... But Northern bibimbap has like that little soup thing that's put into it, right?
Yeah. And you know what? I had no idea that was Northern until you just said it right now. And I'm like, I've never had that in South Korea. But yeah. So anyway, you get this option in like North Korea if you want either bibimbap or Pyongyang naemyeon, Pyongyang cold noodles. And like there are certain restaurants that specialize in it. The... jjigae that you were just mentioning is tofu jjigae, right? And it also has seafood in it.
They usually have seafood, like shrimp, clams.
It's so good.
Or like, sometimes I like it with just kimchi and beef.
Nice. Yeah. Ooh, okay. But then that's kimchi jjigae, right?
No, but it's like sundubu jjigae because like the base is still different. The kimchi jjigae is...
It's kimchi base.
It's a little bit different.
Okay. Just because you mentioned your family, I mean, I know we keep dipping between different topics, but like...
They're all somehow related.
Yeah. I don't know if it's probably... It's probably the soju influence. I hope everyone's listening to this with a glass of wine or at least as well. So tell us a little bit about your family background and like, I don't know, do you have any like historical, political or, you know, any interesting stories from like your family's history with Korea and with China?
Oh, okay. So... On my father's side, my grandfather was actually born in the Qing Dynasty. In 1910.
That makes the Qing Dynasty feel, like, so present.
Yeah. It wasn't too long ago, actually. Yeah, I mean, but, like, how many people today, like, my age, our age, can say their grandfather's from the Qing Dynasty?
I mean, I certainly cannot.
Yeah.
But,
like... Okay, my grandfather was 50 when my dad was born.
Oh,
that's the thing, yeah. Because my dad had me a little bit later, because my dad was born in 1960.
Oh.
Yeah. And so...
Same. I mean, like, my parents actually in the 60s as well.
Yeah, yeah. My grandfather was from Shandong Province, which is the province where Qingdao beer is from.
But if you don't know Qingdao beer, it is probably the best beer in China, which, to be honest, no offense, but it's not saying much because Chinese beer is not great. However, Qingdao is a very interesting place because it does have a lot of German influence.
Yes.
And hence the good beer, kind of.
And yeah, Shandong was pretty impoverished, and there was this phenomenon called Chuangguandong, which describes the wave of migration from mostly Shandong province to northeastern China, beginning in the latter half of the 19th century, which was the Qing Dynasty, and well into the 20th. So like Republican China, and also the era of Japanese encroachment on China. And whether it was under the Qing or like during the era of Japanese occupation, what remained the same was the fact that people from Shandong went there to seek better opportunities. So my grandfather and his older brother were part of that wave, and they were in China's northeast for a while, and then they eventually made their way down to Korea, which was then still occupied by Japan. And they specifically ended up in Hichon City in Chagang Province, which I don't think is open to tourism today, right?
Every province is open to tourism now, apart from one, which is only open to Chinese tourists. But that's
Chagang province, right? That's the province.
That's basically because the passport, like the customs office, don't have the ability to handle foreign passports. They only have the ability to handle Chinese passports. So I guess in the future it could be open. And hey, you could go because you've got a
Chinese passport. They still do make a difference between like mainlanders, Taiwanese, and Hong Kong.
That's true.
They still do make some sort of differentiation.
That's true.
So they lived in Chagang for a while, and then my grandfather decided to go to Seoul, or I guess as your audience might be more used to hearing it, Seoul. Yeah, maybe I'll say Seoul for the rest of it.
The capital of South Korea.
Yeah, well, at that point, it was just the capital of Korea.
Yes.
Yeah. He decided to go there while his brother stayed in Hicheon. And then 1945 came, and the U.S. and the Soviets decided to split Korea at the 38th parallel. It's actually a line. I think the line was originally drawn by the Japanese.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I thought it was the U.S.
The U.S. just kind of, like, went along with it. It was, like, because a lot of, like, when the U.S. took over South Korea, they still kept, like, the Japanese laws intact and stuff. It was basically like, hey, you Japanese people know how to run this place. We're just going to inherit all this stuff from you.
But wasn't it, like, two U.S. guys who, like, sat in a room and basically, like, drew the straight line across the peninsula?
Yeah, but the 38th parallel had been picked before by the Japanese for a war purposes.
Okay.
Like, in the situation of fighting ended up there, it's like, I think the forces that were stationed in, like, Manchuria would be, like, north of the 38th, and the others would be sent. Yeah.
And this border actually shifts as well. So I think a few people have seen, like, a couple of videos that I've done on Kaesong, which is actually the ancient capital of the Korean Peninsula. And it used to be in South Korea, which means that, it's now part of North Korea. That line kind of shifted. But back when it was in South Korea during the Korean War, it was saved a lot of bombing because it was part of South Korea. During this war, like, a lot of North Korea was, like, I mean, you know, I don't know how much percentage of North Korea, but, like, most of it was flattened, which means
all major cities were flattened.
Yeah. Which means that, like, I mean, I think that there's, like, one building left in Pyongyang that they're really, like, proud of, like, something a couple like of that. Archways or something like that. But Kaesong retains a lot of its original architecture because it wasn't flattened during the war, which is really interesting because it actually has a lot more traditional stuff than South Korea does. Because in South Korea, in Seoul, you'll go to... What's that really famous place that tourists go to? The really old street. There is one place in Seoul that is well known for its, like, traditional streets and stuff like that. But this street is basically, like, you know, it's kind of been renovated and stuff like that. So it feels really fake. It feels not, you know, not so traditional and stuff. But in Kaesong, you can walk around these alleyways and, it's kind of a shame. Like we were talking about the start, it hasn't been renovated and it does retain that old kind of feel because they obviously haven't put the money into renovating it. But in a way that does keep its charm as well. You know, these walls are crumbling and stuff like that. It does keep the charm. But anyway, that's Kaesong, so carry on. I interrupted.
But that means there's an opportunity to renovate it in a way that stays faithful to its original vibes.
True. And I think, you know, I'm not saying that they didn't do a bad job in South Korea. This area in South Korea does look very traditional. I mean, it's one of the we're getting the telpi out. Yeah, get that dried fish out. this area in Seoul is a place to go to. Like, it's a good place to go to. But I just feel that Kaesong feels a lot more natural. So we are now eating strips of dried fish. This podcast has taken a... we're almost an hour in and we haven't really covered anything concrete, so it's the time to get the dried fish out. We're spicy.
It is. So my grandfather ended up in Seoul, and then not too long after, and then after 1945, he lost contact with his brother, and then the Korean War happened in 1950, and that's when my grandfather's brother. His family, so he had a wife and two kids, who I met, Hicheon got flattened by the U.S. and they ended up, like, hiding in a cave, And they were found by the Chinese People's Volunteer Army, who were basically like, hey, you should go back to China. It's very dangerous over here. So they walked back, took a few months, and they settled in Shenyang, which is in Liaoning province. And yeah, I visited my relatives in Shenyang.
This is Shenyang in China, by the way, just for those who don't know. And there's a lot of North Koreans there, actually.
Yeah, I visited my relatives there and my aunt. So my grandfather's brother's daughter was telling me about how they could only move at night because anything that moved during the day was probably get bombed by the U.S., by the Air Force. They were trying to bomb the supply lines to the front lines of the Chinese People's Volunteer Army. So they had to move at night. And she saw people getting bombed. She had been like on the verge of starvation, and yeah, it was a very difficult journey. And her mother had bound feet because I guess they were from the Qing Dynasty. That was still a thing back then. So imagine just walking months in the cold, because this was in after October, like towards December, from like October to like December. I think they got to Shenyang in like January or something like that.
It gets cold. Like we're talking like it can get to like -15. It's cold.
Yeah, and she was like 10 back then or something like that. So she was a little kid and she was like just carrying things on her back. Yeah, so it's eventually that side of the family, I guess things opened up a little bit more. People in South Korea could get in contact with people on mainland China. So then that side of the family wanted to get in contact with our side of the family. And apparently the Chinese diaspora in Korea isn't too big, and pretty good records were kept, so they found us and got in contact with us in the late 90s or early 2000s. And yeah, we stayed in contact, and in 2019, I went to Shenyang and visited. And my dad grew up in South Korea, and back then, the law was if your father's not Korean, you're not Korean. And the only Chinese government they had diplomatic relations with was the one on Taipei. Yeah, that's how my dad got basically a Taiwanese passport.
Wow.
And he was a citizen. The school he attended was like for overseas Chinese, and they followed the same curriculum that was taught here in Taiwan. So he had the same education as my mom, basically. My mom's Taiwanese. And and a lot of them ended up coming to Taiwan for university. My dad included. Because they had, and back then the KMT was also really trying pretty desperately to win over overseas Chinese, and they understood the situation there, so they were like, okay, you get to we're gonna set up schools, you're gonna get our citizenship, you can have all these benefits. If you come here, you get like points added to your entrance exams. So these sorts of programs.
So in a system where the PRC, which is, you know, as we know as China, was maybe not so welcoming, then the ROC, which we know as Taiwan, was perhaps a little bit more welcoming to not full Han Chinese, or, you know.
Well, it's not a matter of that. It was just because this, like, South Korea just only had diplomatic relations with Taipei.
Right.
That's really the only thing, because if you want to talk about diversity, mainland China is much more diverse as far as Han or non-Han than over here. The percentage of Han in Taiwan is much higher than on the mainland, actually.
That's true. And I think that you bring up an important point, which I kind of mentioned as we were walking around before, but I challenge our listeners right now to first answer the question, does your country recognize Taiwan as an independent country?
No countries do, because the ones that have diplomatic ties with Taipei recognize the Republic of China as the Chinese government.
Yeah.
It's just kind of an awkward system, because it's like now you have an administration that doesn't like these claims and they want to move a little bit more towards like separatism, but at the same time they operate under this existing framework. It's a lot of...
It's complicated, it's politics, we don't really talk about it here, but hey, it's interesting. And actually, there are some countries that do. I think there's only about 10 countries that recognize Taiwan over China, because, and that's a very important point, you can only recognize one of them. And I think the more time I spend in Taiwan, the more I kind of relate a lot of my time here to... things that are going on the Korean Peninsula. I find it very interesting, but that's obviously
the history's heavily tied. There's a lot more, like, there's a lot more than you would expect, like the history of like the Korea and like cross-strait relations and even just history in Taiwan, because like what we both have in common, like Taiwan and Korea, is we were both colonized by Japan. Taiwan a little bit longer than Korea.
Yeah, definitely. Anything else on your family?
Not too much else that's Korea related.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting story. I don't mean to say like, oh, anything else. Like, your family story is so interesting. So like, thank you so much for sharing it with us. And I think like, it's super unique and it makes your DPRK experience so unique as well. Like, there are so few people that visit North Korea anyway, but there's so few people that like have these kind of like, this kind of context upon which to understand the DPRK. Oh. So I find that super cool.
Well, actually, both of my paternal grandparents have lived in what's now North Korea.
Oh, that's super cool.
I think my paternal grandmother's Korean. Though because my dad faced a lot of discrimination in Korea as a kid for being Chinese, like he kind of denies it. He's like, if you look at the family history, her family came from China 300 years ago. She'll try to cope that way, but yeah, she's Korean. Oh. She's Korean, and she lived in Chongjin for a little bit when she was in her youth, I think. Yeah.
Okay, so, Chongjin's in the northeast of North Korea.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny because in North Korea, I don't go in and just say, oh yeah, I have this, I just say everything. But it's like, as I get to know my guy, it's like better. Huh. And if it gets brought up, oh. Like one thing leads to another, I'll be like, oh yeah, you know what, actually my grandmother lived in Chongjin for a little bit. Like, wait, your grandmother lived in Chongjin, but I thought you were Chinese. And I'm just like, well, my grandmother's Korean. 할머니는 남조선 사람입니다. And then like, it's so funny because at that point you're like, oh, we're a little bit closer than we thought, and they start treating me a little bit better.
Yeah. Then you're,
I mean, they're already nice to me, but then after I mentioned that, and like, I guess because I know how to like talk to them, and I understand their sensitivities and whatever. Like my guide in Rasun, he said, I feel like you have a very genuine emotional connection to Korea. That's what he told me. So that meant a lot to me because it was like, I mean, I wasn't there trying to like be like a pick me or anything, but it's like what he said is correct. Like there is this sort of emotional connection because it's part of my roots, and you know, I feel really lucky that I got to connect with my part of the family that got separated because of the war. I just think so many people in Korea never have this opportunity.
That's so true.
Yeah.
And it's a true tragedy. Like, you know, I think a lot of the time through Western media and stuff, we see North Korea and the, you know, the Korean issue and stuff like that through the eyes of the media lens, where we're kind of seeing it, you know, it's a crisis, but it's a it's an international security crisis. It's not a crisis of the North Korean and South Korean people, the Korean people who have been separated for, you know, for decades, just for living on the wrong side of the border, just even a few miles away from each other and never able to see family again. And, you know, the true tragedy in this is that as time moves on, a lot of people are dying out. And these, you know, with time, these emotional connections also die out as well. Okay, so we kind of tried to talk about your music video. I'm going to go back to it for like fourth time, whatever. Tell me the background. I want to where did you film it and why? Asked you that before, but let's get back to it. So
I tried to film it all over, but then I succumbed to food poisoning, so most of it was shot in Pyongyang.
That was where this half an hour of conversation went.
Most of it was in Pyongyang. It was just done on a selfie stick, just wherever I could. I just wanted it to like kind of look cool. Like part of it was like in front of the Juche Tower, which overlooks the Taedong River. Some of it was on Kim Il-sung Square, which is right across from the Juche Tower on the other side of the Taedong River. And I always just thought, I didn't ask for permission per se, but my idea was just if anyone stopped me, I would have just complied.
Right.
But nobody did anything. I got some funny looks from passersby, but I feel like if I did the same thing over here or anywhere else, I'd probably get funny looks as well.
I would give you funny looks. Like, what are you doing? And how does one film a music video? Genuinely from, a perspective of someone who's never filmed a music video, what do? You just, like, lip sync into the camera, like, in front of fun things? Like,
what happens? Basically. I mean, if you have, like, a professional shoot, then you actually work with, like, a director set designers and all that, and then you spend, like, 3 hours getting the lighting perfect. those are like, you know, actual proper music videos, which I did for the first time in 2022. It's coming out soon. Right. Two of them so far. But if you're like, what I did was just selfie stick, and a lot of like underground music videos are just done, you know, like friends getting together, having fun. You have a camera, you lip sync, and then everything else is done in post.
Cool. Yeah. So, on topic of music, I'm really interested, like, obviously we haven't got much time left because we have just been blabbering along, but I do want to chat about DPRK music a little bit because it's such a guilty pleasure of mine.
Why is it a guilty pleasure? It's just a good pleasure.
It is, but, you know, it's a guilty pleasure for two reasons. Okay, number one...
Okay, weirds people how I am then.
Well, number one, it's a guilty pleasure because I feel like it's the same as, like, whenever you listen to, like, Disney music. Like, North Korean music, in, you know, the simplest of terms, is, like, listening to Disney music because it's cheery, it's happy, it's got those melodies that you can, like, you know, simple melodies that you can sing along with, that you can learn the lyrics for very simply. And so in that respect, I feel like, you know, it's quite similar. So it's embarrassing to listen to Disney music, which, you know, I do a lot of the time anyway. And it's also my guilty pleasure because, hey, it's North Korean music. If you understand the lyrics, it's even more propaganda than if you don't understand the lyrics because they are all mainly political songs. However, my favorite song, Let the Snow Fall on New Year's Day.
Oh, that's a good one.
A great song, nothing titled politically, so yeah, that's a great song, but it remains a guilty pleasure, and I do find it in a weird way. One of my favorite things to do is I find myself in the most bizarre situations that are actually really mundane situations, but I will find myself, you know, in the middle of a beach in the South Pacific, or I will find myself on the middle of a random military island in Taiwan, and I will decide, hey, now is the time that I'm going to blast some North Korean tunes, and I'm just like, I'm sat there in my car or with my earphones on or whatever, and I'm like, no one in the world has ever listened to this song where I am sat right now.
I probably have.
Boy, you've been in the middle of the South Pacific.
In the South Pacific, but like some random place in Taiwan. Okay, if I've been there, I've probably listened to DPRK pop over there.
Fair enough. Okay, so we are one of the maybe two people in the world that has ever done that, but I really enjoy doing that. So... you know, what DPRK music do you listen to? Do you have any recommendations as a musician yourself? Do you have any recommendations for our listeners on like how to get started if they were interested in DPRK music? How, and also how they can like, can someone listen to it without, you know, it being a form of propaganda? Like, are you going to get brainwashed if you listen to North Korean music?
As far as where to begin, everyone has different tastes, so I really can't give specifics as to where to begin, but if you search North Korean music on YouTube and just check many songs out, chances are you'll find something that you vibe with. And as far as propaganda goes, I will say that all art has a layer of propaganda in it, whether if it's conscious or not. If you listen to songs that promote decadence or nihilism, like, isn't that propaganda? And we see a lot of that in songs we don't think of as propaganda. Because, like, you know, young teenagers, they listen to songs about, like, drugs or whatever. And, like, when they're younger, they're taught in school that these things are bad. But then they listen to these songs, and they're like, oh, wait, but these artists make it seem so cool. Maybe it's not bad. Isn't that a form of propaganda? It's changing, it's shifting the way you think, right?
Yeah.
Even music that's not, like, inherently propaganda, it affects the way you feel. You listen to, say, like Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, don't you feel a certain way? Probably, right? It's like it's a powerful song. I mean, the fact that if you don't understand Korean, it's not really gonna affect you too much in terms of how you think. But I really like how a lot of the songs have even the propaganda songs, like what is it, The Advance of Socialism? You know that one?
If you sung it, That one.
It's this sort of like optimism about, hey, we're going to build a better future. We're going to build a better society. And even some of their songs, like Pieces on the Bayonet. You know that one?
Sing it for me.
Like
우리의 정상 우예, 우리의 정상 우예, 평화가, 평화가 있다.
It's like, you can feel like they're expressing the pain that they as a country have felt in the past, like having all their cities bombed. They don't say it explicitly, but that's what they're talking about. And it's like, but they're not really asking for pity. It's more like, hey, we don't want that to ever happen again. So we are upping our defenses. That way we can secure peace. Whether or not you agree with it is one thing, but it's a form of positivity because, like, nowadays, like, especially, like, in the West, there is a sort of culture of just, like, seeking pity.
Yes, I find that so much in the UK.
Yes, and, like, that's just, like, the polar opposite. It's, like, a different attitude. So even, you don't have to agree with it politically, but it's, like, through that music, you can understand their attitudes about certain things, which is, I think it's very valuable.
That's very true. So you find listening to North Korean music a kind of gateway to understanding a little bit more about this country that is, you know, so apparently closed off and stuff.
And it's, if you know a few songs, like, it's just one thing to talk about with locals. And, like, if you don't, if you can sing a few, even if you don't speak Korean, it's a way to bond with locals in a way. It's like, it's, what is it? Like, food, drink, music.
Oh, yeah.
That's how you bond with. It's universal languages.
It's totally universal languages. And that goes from, I don't know if anyone's seen the Michael Palin in North Korea documentary. That is a great documentary and shows Michael Palin, who's a famous British actor. He visits North Korea on May Day. And, you know, he just spends a lot of the time kind of having barbecue, drinking with the locals and stuff like that. It's just such a pure experience. And I can relate to it so much because that happens every single time to me on a national holiday. Holiday, you know, I am chilling, singing with the locals. I actually have a really embarrassing video on, like, YouTube and maybe some other channels of me singing, where I literally crash. Like, this is one of those things where I'm like, how is it fake? Like, I literally crash a party, like a karaoke party, of some drunk North Koreans in the park, where, like, we just end up going there in order to have barbecue. And, like, my guides get annoyed with me. They're like, Zoe, can you come and, like, organize the group, please, and, like, actually do your job? And I'm like, hold on, just give me, like, 2 minutes. And I just, like, go, I run up the hill because I can hear my, like, favorite song playing at this karaoke group. They're, like, just drinking and dancing and stuff. And I'm like, I have something I need to do, some important business. I just go and, like, start singing with them. And, you know, music really connects you. And I think without knowing a lot of North Korean music, I wouldn't have had half of the experiences that I know. And therefore, I always make sure, you know, in my tour bag, whilst I am on tour, it's very important to have things like the first aid kit, you know, a list of names, because I'm definitely going to forget your name. But more importantly, I have my song lyrics and I have my mic. I literally have a portable mic and I will make you learn those songs and we will sing them on the bus and we will have a lot of fun because music brings us all together. It is universal. It is very human. It's beautiful.
Is your favorite song on 가리라 백두산으로?
I hate to say it, but yeah, like, I feel like it's face every, it. Yeah, it's every Westerner's favorite song. And
but it is, I heard it everywhere when I went in 2018. It was just everywhere. Like, by day four, I'd be singing it in the shower.
Yeah. My other favorite song would be the Mass Game song for 2018, which you probably heard because you were also there.
I was there, but what?
It's like the official Mass Game song. That would probably be my favorite song if I had to say a favorite song, or Let the Snow Fall on New Year's Day, because I had such a magical experience where I swear this literally happened in New Year's on 2019. It was like, if anyone says anything is fake about North Korea, I literally was like, this is fake, this is not real, because 10 minutes before midnight, I was standing in the middle of a crowd in Pyongyang, and there were, like, random North Korean students all around me singing, and, like, we were, like, forming, like, a conga line. It was all getting a bit crazy. And then just as the New Year's countdown started, and honestly, just as this song started, like, it literally started to snow. And, like, it was one of those things where I was like, well, this is a snow machine. It's not really real. news outlets, they were also baffled by this because they could not find the snow machine. And then it stopped. It like snowed for like 5 minutes and then it stopped. Literally just during that song. Yeah.
I think one of my favorite songs, I don't have a particular favorite, but I think it's Charlie Ma on the Wing.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
I like the break in the middle, like without the lyrics.
So many synths in North Korean music.
No one beats them at using them.
Yeah, really.
Very few people are better than North Koreans at making music. You have to admit it.
Would you ever think about using North Korean music, like remixing it into your own
music? Of course, yeah. I've tried sampling it, but I'm not the best beat maker. But you know, like in hip hop, if you try to sample, you usually take like a smaller segment or like a few segments and string them together. But it's like, man, I like this whole passage. How do I pick just one part? It becomes very difficult.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else that you wanted to kind of talk about?
Not that I can think of.
Okay.
Because we're going to be doing this sort of stuff like a little bit more in the future.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I already have some topics that we need to still speak about. So we have kind of darted here, there and everywhere. And there's lots of ginseng, random soju stuff still flowing everywhere. So I hope everyone has kept up so far. We're going to kind of leave things here for now, but there are so many things that I actually still want to discuss with you, Xiangyu. So we'll have to kind of pick things back up where we left off. And I don't necessarily mean that with the soju and the ginseng weird stuff. But before we go, like, I kind of want to, you know, you've been active in the DPRK world for maybe longer than me, actually, and you've got your fingers in a lot of pies. Like, maybe you want to talk about, like, I don't know, if you're active, like, what kind of fingers you have in what kind of pies, and also, you know, this is your time for a bit of self-promo. Where can people find you, and why would people want to find you? Let us know.
Well, my main social media, Twitter, has been suspended. I'm trying to get my account back. Hopefully I get it back. But my handle was at not Xiangyu, so NotXingyu, because I've been banned before then. Like, before that, that was like my third account.
Hey, this episode is coming out in like a few weeks, so fingers crossed it is out by this point.
Probably not. I'm not too optimistic. But my Instagram is xiangyu.tw, and my YouTube channel is at Zhong Xiangyu, ZHONGXIANGYU. But most of the stuff there is like a few years old. My upcoming music videos will be uploaded there though. So maybe by the time this is out, my newest video will already be out. And there's another one that'll follow shortly after. And I'm currently working on my album. So if you want to support that, if you just follow me on anywhere, like on Instagram or my YouTube, then you'll have more information on it. If you want to support, buy a physical copy or listen to it on streaming services, then the relevant information will become available as the time approaches.
Cool. I mean, I'm genuinely really excited about that. And are you working on any DPRK related projects at the moment, or you have any intentions to go back and visit the DPRK at some point?
I can't leave Taiwan until I am done with my compulsory service. So even if they, I'm gonna have so much FOMO if, like, I'm still doing my service and you go back.
So that's, for those that don't know, that's like the kind of military service in Taiwan. Every male needs to do that before the age of
36.
Before the age of 36. Just like in South Korea as well, it kind of got a lot of media attention from BTS having to do their military service. It's the same thing in Taiwan. Although, obviously, our guest here, Xiangyu, is much bigger than BTS. So I don't know why you had to go to do the
where the service. People go, I go.
Oh, okay. Is that the title of your next album?
No. I do have a title, but I'll announce it a little bit later.
Oh, okay. Never mind. Excellent. Okay. Cool. You all good? You said your stuff?
I said all my stuff.
All right.
So is this the part where we sing, 몸에요 소리칩니다
안녕히 다시 만나요. It's been a long time since I've said that. I used to have one guide who used to sing that to me every single time. It's made me think of him a lot. Oh, beautiful. Anyway, thank you so much for being part of this podcast. And actually, I shouldn't really say part of this podcast or a guest of this podcast, because let's be honest, you set up this whole thing today. That's why the sound quality is probably a lot better than usual. And set up. Yeah, and were you the main topic of today? So thank you so much for making this episode possible. And thank you to the listeners for joining in. Do tune in next time where, you know, to be honest, I have no idea what the next episode is going to be because I record these episodes a little bit in advance, especially when I have guests. But I promise you it's going to be an interesting one. I try and keep them as fun and unique as possible. So thank you for joining in. And just one last time, my social media handles are at Zoe Discovers or at Zoe Discovers NK. And Xiangyu, yours are?
My Instagram is at xiangyu.tw. My Twitter is at not xiangyu. And my YouTube is at ZHONGXIANGYU. And I guess one thing that we're both doing is we're going to appear on my friend's podcast, Silk and Steel Podcast.
Yes.
Hosted by Carl Zha. I don't know, some of you guys might have heard of him. Many of you guys probably not. So it's pretty interesting. He's a walking encyclopedia on mostly Chinese history and Chinese current events, but also, you know, things in the vicinity.
Yeah, who knows? But, you know, who knows how quickly he edits his recordings, but potentially that one could come out before this one does. But also we do have some exciting videos, at least one exciting video together planned as well. I don't know how much we want to give away on that. But for those foodies out there, it could be quite a fun one.
Yes.
Yes, so
I think you gave enough of it away.
Exactly, yeah. I think that's enough of a teaser. Yeah. So basically, make sure to follow both of us on social media and we will see you, hear from you very soon. If you have any questions, if you have any guest recommendations, if you have any comments, if you really like this podcast, if you really don't like this podcast, then just let me know. You can also contact me on zoediscovers@gmail.com. Thank you very much. I've been Zoe and we've had Xiangyu on as a guest and I will see you or hear you next time. Thank you. Goodbye.
是上只是把自己给毁了，是集体落队，自己疑惑，用个不断被反复试力迷惑来。Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.